Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Teresa Brown. Teresa is the Dean of Student Support and the Induction Coordinator at Academy for Advanced and Creative Learning, a charter school in Colorado Springs School District 11. She is also the president of Pikes Peak Association for Gifted Students. She is a STAR grant chair for the Colorado Literacy Organization and vice president for the Pikes Peak Literacy Organization. We'll talk about that in the podcast and some of our involvement in these organizations. Welcome to the podcast, Teresa.
Hi.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
So I started teaching almost 20 years ago. And when you start teaching, you have all of the good, you want to do good, right? Mm-hmm. You want to meet all the kids' needs. And I worked in a school district where it's tough. I mean, you have families who are up against poverty, families who are homeless, and families who are incredibly supportive of their kids, but just don't have the means to do a lot of the things that they would like. And during my first 3 years of teaching, one of the things that stood out to me was the fact that I had such a broad range of students in my classroom. Mm-hmm. When you think about fifth graders, one is reading at a seventh or eighth grade level. Another one is still reading at first grade level, and they're all together. And trying to meet that wide variety of needs was really difficult. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that made things more difficult was that where I was didn't allow me to differentiate up. So my students who were struggling, but not because they didn't know, not because they hadn't been taught, but because they were advanced, weren't getting what they needed, and hence behavior problems began. But that was something in my gut said that was wrong. You can't leave those kids behind. They're not going to be fine. They're not going to learn. They're not going to have the same opportunities as others unless their needs are met in the classroom and at home. And so my first year of teaching, my gut went, no, you're just a first year teacher. Mm-hmm. This isn't real. You don't know what you're talking about. And my second year, my gut got louder and louder. Mm-hmm. And by my third year, I said, no, I got to do something else. This isn't working. I'm not meeting mm-hmm. the needs of anybody right now. And a friend of mine told me that a little charter school was starting in Colorado Springs, and it was designed to meet the needs of gifted learners. Now, in college, I had no gifted mm-hmm. beyond, a 5-second conversation of, so you're going to have meet these kids, and you're going to have some of them, and they're really smart, and they're going to need some more work. And that was it as far as gifted was concerned. And so I kind of stalked the steering committee for our school mm-hmm. and I attended all the meetings, and it felt like home. It felt right. The things that they talked about in the steering committee meetings and in the board meetings were what I felt education should be for all kids, mm-hmm. but particularly those kids who get overlooked. And so when our school opened 12 years ago, I was part of the founding group of teachers, of which we now have, I think there's two of us left, maybe three. But what was interesting about the transition between working in a place where your ideas weren't heard, you wanted to be outside the box, you wanted to meet the needs of these other kids. They're like, no, this is a curriculum. You're going to do it with fidelity. It has to be done this way. Mm-hmm. No, you can't do anything over and above. It was hurtful. So it took a very long time for me to get confidence back. Mm-hmm. But what was fun about it was we were flying the plane and building it at the same time. And so my teammate and I would get together and say, all right, what are we doing next week? Because we knew what we needed to teach. And she had so much more experience than I did. But I also had this, I was able to be a little more outside the box, a little more creative with it. Mm-hmm. And so she'd provide the foundation and then we would move forward together in creating lessons and units that the kids still remember. Mm-hmm. I talked to some of them now and I mean, they've graduated college, they're grownups, mm-hmm. But they remember those little things like being mm-hmm. able to study medieval weaponry and the time we created castles and their parents said, no, please don't do the castle project again, ever. but listening to my gut got me to where I am now. Mm-hmm. I spent 6 years in the classroom and it was lovely and amazing. And I loved every single second of it, but I wanted to be a better advocate for the kids because mm-hmm. you can mm-hmm. do things in the classroom, but you're impacting 25, you know, kids in a room. Whereas in a role like I have now, I'm able to go with my gut and say, no, you really do have to look at that kid. You've got to take a look and see what else is going on because the behavior is not related to behavior. It's mm-hmm. related to the fact that the child is bored. What's going to motivate them? What are you already doing in the classroom that you can modify? And this way I'm able to better support and advocate for the needs of multitudes of kids rather than only my 25 in my classroom. Mm-hmm. So.
And you told me in the pre-chat, you've been on the leadership team since your third year mm-hmm. at the school. And tell me a little bit about kind of the division of the classrooms and how it's divvied up, you know, like the third graders and second graders. Since it is a charter school, you guys have a little bit more leniency in how you mm-hmm. maybe group kids by age instead of
right. So the way that our school is designed is with multi-age classrooms. And so rather than grade levels, we talk about divisions. Mm-hmm. Division one is kindergarten and they spend 1 year in kindergarten, right? And then in division two, it's first and second grade. Division three is third and fourth. Division four is five and six and division five is seven and eight. Mm-hmm. So we go K through eight for language arts and math. Our students are able to go to whatever level that they need. And so mm-hmm. from a teacher standpoint, it's kind of up in the air until we have a idea of who's going to be needing what level they're going to teach. So you may have kindergartners that are going to a second grade reading class. You may have third graders that are spending some more time in second grade because they're still missing some of those skills. Mm-hmm. You have students who are in our high school level course who are, in addition to adding to their sophistication of writing, they're mm-hmm. also in the process of creating movies each year mm-hmm. and learning the ins and outs of writing screenplays and all of the stuff behind the scenes, the filming, the editing, how music plays a role in theater. And it's, you know, when you've got a fourth grader who's ready to take pre-algebra, mm-hmm. you can't stick them in a fourth grade level math class mm-hmm, just because mm-hmm. they're the age of a fourth grader. They need that challenge. They're ready for it. And it's fascinating to see all of these, you know, older kids sitting in a room with a fourth grader who's sitting on their knees at a table because they're too short yeah. to sit at it properly, but they're more engaged in the conversation than some of the older kids are because that's their passion. That's where their gifts lie. But because of the way that we're structured, we're able to be honor both the developmental level of the child, but also mm-hmm. they get to be with their idea mates during the course mm-hmm. of the day, not just their age mates. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that sounds like a great opportunity for those kids who, you know, can be pushed to their level in the subjects that they excel in. And maybe if they're at their own grade level for reading, they could stay in that class as well. Yep. And so you talked a little bit when you answered that question, the first question about the trench story. You know, you talked a little about just kind of the need to differentiate in you know, the fact that you were teaching, was it second grade at the time, your first couple of years?
Fifth.
Okay, fifth grade. And was there anything that you, not having been trained in GT, what were able to do or any courses that you took at the time just to kind of find ideas before you joined the staff at your current school?
Everything I learned about gifted, I kind of learned on my own. Mm-hmm. We had a gifted coordinator for the entire district. Mm-hmm. And I reached out to her kind of under the table and said, hey, I've got these kids, help. I need more. And she'd send me things through the pony and say, here, try this. It looks like everybody's going to be doing exactly the same thing, but this is higher level thinking. And mm-hmm. so I took a lot of professional development in higher level thinking skills and questioning that would allow kids to go deeper into whatever content it was that, you know, we were studying. Because it's mm-hmm. not just knowing that there are nine planets, and there are because Pluto is a planet and I will fight to the death to prove it. but it's also about, you know, how did the names of the planets come about? What's the mm-hmm. historical significance of them? There's so much more than just memorizing the names of the planets or memorizing the 50 states mm-hmm. that kids can learn that will develop their curiosity about more than just the topic at hand. You know, hi guys, today we're going to be learning about, you know, planets mm-hmm. and here's all you need to know. Cause it really is more than that. You mm-hmm. want kids to be the ones who are thinking about what's next.
Yeah.
And so when I started at my current school, our director is, you know, she did all of her master's coursework in gifted. She's raising two amazing gifted children of her own. Mm-hmm. Both of which I had the pleasure of having in class. But the kids taught me a ton because mm-hmm. I never told them that they couldn't ask questions. Mm-hmm. We would have projects at the end of a unit and I'd give them a board, mm-hmm. a choice board of essentially. And the middle one was always, you choose. I mean, I had the final say, but I'd walk them through it. So tell me about what you want to do. You have to put forth, I need a proposal. How mm-hmm. is this going to demonstrate what you've learned in this unit? And for a lot of kids, that was the first time somebody had said, yes, you can do it differently. Mm-hmm. And continuing to work with them and ask questions as they went gave them the ability to think more deeply and think more complex thoughts about the things that we were doing. And what was probably one of the best things we did is a friend of mine is an engineer. And so we got him on Zoom and he talked to the kids about what it is to be an engineer and renewable resources and things like that. But the questions they came up with weren't simple questions. Mm-hmm. They were much more high level and things that a high school kid would want to know because mm-hmm. they were interested. So.
Yeah. And that's great to, you know, be able to bring in those guest speakers via virtual or in person and like, just have them like go kind of be set loose and ask whatever questions they'd like of those professionals and learn more about those fields that they want to get involved with. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your involvement with some organizations I mentioned in the bio. So there's CAGT, which is the Colorado Association for Gifted Talented. And what is your role with that organization?
So I'm a general board member and I came on as someone to help get vendors and such for our conference that happens each year. And when it's held in person, it's held in Loveland. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's huge. It's really, really well attended. And unfortunately, COVID happened and a lot of vendors didn't want to do something online necessarily. Mm-hmm. And the funding just wasn't there. So it was an incredible challenge to get the people who would normally be really supportive of us, but they were in crisis too. Mm-hmm. What I enjoy most about working with CAGT is the fact that everyone who is on the board and everyone who comes to the meetings and everyone who works with them wants to see their kids learning. They want to understand more about who their kids are, mm-hmm. because gifted is who you are. It's not what you produce. And yeah. that's always run. It's a theme running throughout any conference that we put on. This year, they, the National Association for Gifted Children had a convention here in Denver, and our entire school went, and we were, and CAGT was supportive of what they were doing, but it was so nice to get to be with people who got it, people mm-hmm. who work with kids every day, and find out that, you know, kids in Philadelphia are going through a lot of the same things that our kids are. Teachers want to learn the same things that our teachers do, how to better meet their needs. So,
yeah. And
this podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
I went to that conference myself several years back, but just, you know, the level of resources and just sessions on brain science and all that is just eye-opening for any educator working with GT kids. And you're also involved with the Pikes Peak Association of Gifted Students. And mm-hmm. What is your role with them? And you guys said maybe you're going to have some type of conference in person, but you're not quite sure this coming year.
Well, so we, so Pikes Peak Association for Gifted Students is the local affiliate for CAGT, and I'm the president-elect. Mm-hmm. We are having a conference virtually in January on the 22nd.
Okay.
And we've done two virtual conferences, but we started holding in-person ones a couple of years ago, and then COVID happened, and that was the end of that for now. And we're a resource for parents. Mm-hmm. You know, you get the little letter that says, congratulations, your kid's been identified gifted. And you go, uh-huh, okay, now what? Mm-hmm. And so PPEGS is all about supporting parents and giving them ideas for how to engage their kids in learning and how to keep them engaged, how to support them socially and emotionally. I mean, the level of anxiety in our kids right now, gifted and otherwise, is enormous. Mm-hmm. But the intensities of a gifted child make it that much more complicated. And so last year we had speakers about executive functioning. We had speakers talking about teaching kids how to self-advocate, how to be an advocate for your child in the classroom. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many parents I talk to every school year that, you know, my kid is a first grader, but they're doing, you know, fourth grade level math, but they won't let him go to fourth grade level math because he's six. Mm-hmm. And he can add and he can subtract and he knows fractions and he can multiply and divide. And it's not just single digit numbers and it's not something I'm making up. Really, my child knows how to do this. And teaching parents and giving them an opportunity to talk to other parents that are going through the same thing or have gone through the same thing. With families who have neurotypical children, you can go to the soccer game and you can talk about, you know, hey, Joey got an A on his spelling test. And, you know, Sarah is doing really well in her English class in high school. But the second you, as a parent of a gifted kid, bring up the fact that your fourth grader is taking pre-algebra, everybody looks at you like you're nuts. And yeah, stop, you know, you're bragging. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Your kid's not doing that. And you know, it's deflating. And at the same time, you don't have a group of people you can go to. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. My kid is doing this, please help. Yeah. I don't know what to do. No.
Yeah. That sounds like a great opportunity, you know, to find like-minded parents and, you know, parents that understand kind of what's going on and, mm-hmm. you know, cause you don't always have that support, you know, with the soccer game or whatever it is. So, mm-hmm. Given your role as a dean of, you know, student support and you're dealing with discipline of GT students, and that's not always the first type of student we think of coming to the dean's office. So, right. You know, kind of talk to me about some of the experiences, you know, maybe some of the behavior incidences, the examples of that occur at your school and then your philosophy of discipline.
Sure. So above and everything else, our kids are kids, and they do things that other kids do. In kindergarten, you know, you kick your buddy under the table, or you don't know where you are in space, so you smack somebody in the head when you're in line. Things like that are, you know, fairly typical, and I see those now and again, but really it's about helping kids learn from the mistakes that they make. Just like in any school, we've had incidences of older kids in particular plagiarizing work online, because I think, oh, I'll just cut and paste it, it'll be fine, nobody will know. But teachers have this amazing thing called the internet, and you could plug in whatever a student wrote and it pops up with everywhere those words are found. But it's about teaching them, you know, you're not learning anything by doing this. And so we want, when kids come to my office, I try and walk them through what happened, why it happened, and what they can do differently next time, so that doesn't occur again. For some kids, it's, you know, their own intensities are at play. You know, the people that can't stand when someone else is chewing. Imagine that, but amplify it by about 300. And sometimes just the noise in the room is enough to have a little guy just levitating in place, trying to hold himself together, because all he wants to do is scream, everybody be quiet. But he knows you're not supposed to do that in school. I get a lot of students who just need somewhere quiet to be for a little while. You know, they love their classmates. They think everybody's great, but I just can't be in that room anymore. And helping them to self-advocate for when they need a break like that. I love when little ones come to the office with a folder, and my teacher said that you had to have this right now, Miss Brown. Okay. And I open it up and it's a note, please keep him 10 minutes and send him back. Because he just needed a break. He just needed to be somewhere else. And so I'll be searching for whatever you asked for on the sticky note for a good 10 minutes. And then I'll send him back, you know, with a book or paper or whatever. And it just gave him a chance to reset. It's when you think about us as grownups, we have the ability to self-advocate and say, you know what, this meeting is not going the way that I would like it to. I'm going to suggest that we table everything and we just schedule a new meeting when all of us aren't so upset. As an adult, you can do that. As a little kid in a room of 25 kids, you can't. You can't say, I just need a break. And teaching them to know what it feels like when they start to get really antsy and really, oh my gosh, I just have to leave. And what to do with their anger. These are little guys who have an anger, and a neurotypical kid is, you know, I'm angry at my little sister because she stole my ball. But for a little guy, it starts there. And when you're gifted, it goes to, I'm angry with my little sister who stole my ball, but then I'm upset at the government because this happened. I don't understand why people are homeless. Why are people hungry? And it just escalates. And so they're carrying the weight of their world on their shoulders. And this one tiny little thing about my little sister stole my ball is what sets off all of the other thoughts, and the anger is 100 times worse than it would have been for a neurotypical kid. A lot of my work really is walking kids through. It's okay to have big feelings. All of us have big feelings. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be angry, and it's okay to not like somebody, but it isn't okay to be unkind. And we talk a lot about, the difference between respecting someone and being their friend. You don't have to be friends with everybody. They don't all have to be BFF, but you need to be friendly, and you need to be kind, and you need to be respectful, whether that's of their space, of their stuff, of their ability to learn. Like if you know, and you start to feel like you're getting to a point where you need to have a break, ask for it. And helping teachers understand that kids aren't asking necessarily to get out of class. They're asking for a moment to reset. It's really been interesting, because the things that help calm kids down, a lot of times it's drawing, a lot of times it's music. Sometimes it's just sitting quietly and not having anybody ask you a question. I'm happy to work while somebody's sitting in a chair next to me. No, you go ahead. You take your moment. I'm going to finish this. When we're both calm, then we'll talk. and modeling what it is to be, pardon me, border collie tail, modeling what it is to be able to not only self-advocate, but also self-regulate. Mm-hmm. Our kids just, they struggle with regulation.
Yeah. It's
because they feel everything so strongly. So it's been really interesting. And I love working with the older kids because so often what they're feeling or what they're in my office for, mm-hmm. they didn't anticipate any of the consequences of that mm-hmm. because, you know, their frontal lobe isn't there yet. Their executive functioning is not working correctly because they're not 25 yet. They're only 11. And of course, it's a completely reasonable thing to send a one-liner to the entire school just because you can, mm-hmm. you know, kindergartners read that, man, come on. They had a lot of questions.
Yeah.
So, you know, talking about code switching and how important it is for them to, how you speak to your friends is very different than how you would speak to your employer or how you would speak to your great grandma. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. It's like, it's just maintaining kind of the, you know, like you said, the self-regulation, but you know, they're like any typical kid that mm-hmm. age, you know, the prefrontal cortex has not been developed and they're, you know, they're going to do things without thinking. So yeah, it's typical.
I will never forget the child I talked to and I said, well, you know, dude, why'd you get suspended? Because I noticed that in his file, he'd gotten suspended. He goes, do you really want to know? And I went, yeah, I totally want to know. And he said, well, our school had two stories and I was up on the second story on the stairs. And I looked down and said, I wonder how long it would take my spit to hit the floor. And so he spit off the railing. And unfortunately, a teacher walked just underneath, just in the right moment. I got nailed in the head with
his spit.
So needless to say, there were consequences. And I went, yeah. So what'd you learn? He goes, well, probably making sure the area is clear. Yeah. And not spitting in school is probably a good thing. So it was, you know, it's that idea of just not knowing. I want to know what happens when, and not realizing the implications of it.
Yeah. For people who are new to working with GT kids or have a few students in their classroom who are identified as GT and don't have training necessarily, what should an educator look for when they want to identify the needs of students that are in their class, like the regular ed classroom? Mm-hmm. You know, what should they do to prepare if they don't have much experience with this?
So really, education of gifted kids has to do with really seeing the child. And so mm-hmm. you want to do that for any of the students in your classroom, but more so for the gifted ones, because they're going to come to the table with questions that are unlike mm-hmm. what neurotypical kids are going to come to the table with. Mm-hmm. They're going to want to know more. And when they want to go down a rabbit trail, it's having the ability to say, sure, go ahead and go down that rabbit trail. Come back and share what you learned. Mm-hmm. Learning how to scaffold your questioning. So for instance, when you're reading a novel, it's not just about what happened in the novel, doing a little extra research to find out what was going on during the time that novel was written matters mm-hmm. because the historical significance of it is what's going to draw the students in. Mm-hmm. And thinking if you can take, oh my gosh. So the number of books that I have in the office are tremendous because I buy everything when I go to conferences. Mm-hmm. Bertie Kingler is an amazing resource, and it's tiny little activities. Like instead of having the kids write a summary of, and this will work for all the kids. It's, mm-hmm. but the gifted kids will love it more. Giving them a word triangle and saying in the first line you need to write who, and then the second line is another set of two or three words that encompass this particular item, and the next and the next, so that you end up with this triangle that's really a summary. It's not complete sentences, but it will give you a much better understanding of how the child really understands that particular topic or that concept. Because they're having to whittle everything that they know about it down mm-hmm. to, I think at the most 7 words. And so it's fascinating to watch kids go through that process. I would highly suggest getting to know your gifted resource teacher. Mm-hmm. If you have one in the building or you share one with another, ask questions. Say, you know, there's no motivation for this child. My gut says he's lazy, but everybody else is telling me, no, he's not, he's gifted. Because kids need to understand the purpose in the work. Mm-hmm. You can give them worksheets. Some of them are very compliant and kids will do the worksheets, but they have to understand the why behind the work. And so when you can sit with them and say, here's why I need you to do this. I need to know what you know about X. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have you do these three problems, the hardest problems there are. And then I want you to design, once you're done with those three, if they're all correct, then I want you to go off and you can do this more complex work or mm-hmm. something that requires them to think a little differently about a particular topic. It takes the willingness for the teacher to learn herself or himself to really be able to meet the needs of these kids. Because you can't take just a typical curriculum and mm-hmm. hand it to a teacher and say, I want you to do this with fidelity and really have it meet the needs of everybody. Because half the time, even the things that are listed under the advanced section aren't really all that advanced. Mm-hmm. It might be additional work. It might be something slightly more complex, but you're going to have kids in your room who really need more. Mm-hmm. I used to tell kids that I could teach The Giving Tree or Where the Wild Things Are, because mm-hmm. Where the Wild Things Are by Marie Sendak is my favorite book ever. But I could teach that in kindergarten. I could teach it in first grade. I could teach it in fifth grade. I could teach it to high school kids. But the way I would go about it is very different. And so it doesn't matter what text you're using, so long as you're focusing on this big idea and connections to things that they know and understand and care about. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably the biggest piece of what I would tell teachers who have these amazing kids in their classrooms. Look for the connections and look for the big ideas, mm-hmm. really what's going to matter to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so important. So for a parent, so I'm in this boat right now. My daughter's recently been identified as gifted in math, and she's in sixth grade. So, you know, parents can have children who are identified at just about any grade, and, you know, you fill out the paperwork, and I've been on the other end as an educator working with GT students. But for a parent, what should you expect if you have a child who's kind of in that upper elementary, middle school, or high school level? And, you know, she's already in a class, they have differentiated math classes. So, but like, just as she navigates, they're still in elementary in sixth grade where she's at, but what, as she goes into middle school and high school, kind of supporting her own child, what would some tips be?
So things get, I don't want to say less complicated when they're mm-hmm. in middle and high school, yeah. they actually get a little bit more complicated because there are options. Yeah. And so when you have a student who is gifted in a particular area, a particular subject area, like reading or math or writing or science, being their advocate for a higher level, more complex course mm-hmm. is going to matter. They don't need to just take, you know, your typical level 7 math class. They mm-hmm. need to be taking something that's honors, something that's CU Gold, something that has a little more meat to it. Than just the basic stuff. What we've found for our kids is that they do much better when they're in an honors course mm-hmm. For a particular level, rather than just the regular class that's offered for everybody, in part because the discussions get more complex and the learning is a little, I don't want to say it's a little higher level, but sometimes mm-hmm. that's really what it is. But it is being an advocate for your kid. Mm-hmm. We had my friend's son started school and he was a sophomore when it finally clicked. Mm-hmm. He was checking boxes, basically, and he had an A and then some in the class. Mm-hmm. And he said, why is it that this kid who had a D is doing all the same work that I'm doing? And I'm going above and beyond and I have an A, but I don't feel like I've learned anything. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And giving the kids opportunities to self-advocate in that way and say, I need more, I need something different. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And helping them learn how to have those conversations with adults, because you're going to have that conversation even in the workplace. Mm-hmm. On this project, it's not going the way I want. Here's what I want to do. What do you think? Being able to put forth that idea of here's how I think I could make this better. Mm-hmm. And coming to the teacher with a plan and mm-hmm. letting them talk it out with you as the parent. The other thing that I would tell parents is don't always come to their rescue right away. Mm-hmm. But using the words, do you want me to fix it or do you want me to listen? Because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. oftentimes they just want you to listen. They don't mm-hmm. want you to fix it. They're going to figure it out. And, you know, love and logic says, you know, you can use the words, well, would you like to hear what other kids have tried? Mm-hmm. You can use that, certainly. And they may be very much more receptive than knowing that it's something that you're bringing up because you're mom. Mm-hmm. But I think, again, being that advocate for your child and, I swear to you, my dog, it's like, she knows, being that advocate for your child and walking with them next mm-hmm. to them, not in front of them, taking, you know, mm-hmm. you can't always be the mom who barrels in and says, you're not yeah. meeting my needs, because your kid needs to know how to do that on their own. Right. Yeah. And I think in elementary, it's really knowing, one, it's knowing how to advocate for your child, but it's also how to model for them what it mm-hmm. is to have a conversation about something that is really meaningful. Mm-hmm. Parents will often come and say, this work is not challenging for my child. Mm-hmm. I need them to do X, Y, and Z. And it's important to get to have the child understand that it's not that you're asking for something better. You're asking for mm-hmm. something different. Parents with kids who have other special needs, other learning challenges, go through this all the time in their IEP meetings. Here's what I need my child to have.
Yeah.
And they're often seen as a mama bear, but parents of gifted kids need to do the same thing, because being gifted is in fact a special need. Mm-hmm. They need different, things, they need different ways of learning. So,
well, this has been a really great conversation on just learning about how to serve GT students and working with, you know, discipline issues, you know, talking about your experience with the organizations. Out of everything we talked about on the podcast today, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
Gifted is who they are. Mm-hmm. It's not what they produce. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. not about the work that they do in class. It's not about the work they don't do in class. Gifted is who they are. Mm-hmm. And being able to be a person who sees them for that and honors that matters more than just about anything else.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, it's really important to remember. Where can people connect with you and find you online?
So if you go to academyacl.org, that's mm-hmm. our school website, I'm in under staff. I also have a blog, which is, tallpoppyteaching.com. Mm-hmm. And gosh, Pikes Peak Association for Gifted Students has, both a Facebook and a website. Mm-hmm. And, AGT is just cogifted.org. So reach out any of those places and you can probably find me.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. It was a pleasure having you on.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.